We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast free.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 394 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week, my buddy, Chris Garber. How are you today, Chris?
I'm doing well, Chad. Thank you very much.
Well, it's good to have you. Topic number one, Bengals Steelers this Sunday. What should we expect of Joe Burrow? I pass this one to you, Eleanor Clift.
Ah, love it. Love it. I just remember that show in the context of Cheers probably more than anything else, but wrong, I think was probably the thing I'm supposed to say there.
Exactly. If you know what that reference is, the Saturday Night Live version of it was what I think of the most. So anyway, what do you expect for Joe Burrow this weekend?
Joe Burrow's clearly showing some after effects of his injury, which is certainly to be expected. But the Bengals' offensive line is going to continue to struggle, so that which means Coach Zach Taylor really needs to think about his offensive game plan and ways to put Joe Burrow in positions where his lack of mobility is not going to cause too much trouble against the dangerous Pittsburgh Steelers pass rush.
Do they need to show a little bit of urgency to protect Burrow?
I don't know. A sense of urgency is always welcome, of course, but they just need to be better at football.
I've never seen a sense of urgency from a Cincinnati sports team.
Fair.
All right, let's transition. I don't want to, but let's do it. Your Cincinnati Reds, of course.
Mine.
They're certainly not mine. That's a billion-dollar asset for someone, but not
Bob
me.
Bob Castellini, Cincinnati Reds. I think that's how it should be.
It should be.
Kind of like... What was it? Black Angus Steakhouse had somebody's name, like Stuart Smith's Black Angus Steakhouse.
I'm not going to eat at Stuart Smith's Black Angus Steakhouse. Fair. So the Reds have lost 8 of their last 12 games. We're recording this on Thursday night. They do play the Washington Nationals, but which is good because the schedule is about to get easier.
Yeah. That easy schedule is really paying off.
The Reds finally snapped their streak of 8 consecutive series lost in the middle of their first playoff race in about a decade. But of course, they only did that because the last game against the Pirates got rained out, so they had to settle for a split of the series after losing the final game against Pittsburgh. The Reds now are 5 games out of the wild card with 10 to play. The Reds' record is 78-74, again with 10 games to play. Chris, what do we make of it, and are the Reds going to finish over 500?
I wouldn't put money on it, not at this point. I wish I'd remembered I'm sure we talked about this back in the spring training time about what our predictions were for the season and so forth. And of course, I don't listen to this podcast, so I don't know what I said, but I'm guessing it was somewhere around 500 is what I predicted.
Yeah, so you're going to be right.
Yeah, kind of a funny way to get to 500, isn't it?
It is. I believe I was a little above 500, maybe 83 wins, and they may get there as well. If they go 5-5, I guess they'll be 83 and 79. But why should we expect them to play 500 when they haven't for a while? Yeah, they were 12 games over and in control in the playoff race with an easy schedule ahead of them. The only question really is what happened? And do we have an answer to that? I'm not sure we do.
I mean, we know one thing that happened was Jesse Winker got hurt. But lots of guys got hurt this year. And the team continued to play more or less, you know, same way. Lots of teams have guys get hurt. And they don't completely drop off a cliff. But, you know, correlation is that when Jesse Winker went down, the Reds went in the toilet.
It's true. It's true. And I think maybe that's when it all caught up to him, the fact that this team was so poorly constructed. They just didn't have – because of what happened last offseason, which was nothing, no depth whatsoever. And somehow they, you know, scratched and clawed and we're just going to wait for everybody to get healthy or whatever. As Nick Kroll says, but finally, just all when you're in September and you're literally in the middle of a playoff chase, and you're starting Delino DeShields in center field, and Asdrubal Cabrera is getting playing time. This is not. I mean, that's just not a playoff team.
It's a joke. It's a joke. The whole thing's a joke about how they put the team together, how they supported the team as the season went on. And I'm really frustrated now. Like, I've kind of laughed it off, and truthfully, I've tuned the Reds out for the last month. I'm on to football at this point mentally, but listening to Nick Kroll's whatever it was yesterday, when they kind of like half-heartedly announced David Bell's contract extension, I don't know if there's anybody in Cincinnati sports who has, and I'm sure he's a nice guy, but who is infuriates me as quickly as Nick Kroll does. And it's his actions. Fine. His actions are, I think he's constrained by his employer in almost everything that he does. It's really what he says that drives me absolutely bonkers. It's his like picks out the like weirdest way to say anything. And like kind of Baghdad Bob's the whole thing too. I don't know.
You're right. I think it was you and I on the podcast a month or two ago. We just said he just needs to just not talk.
Yeah.
Just don't talk ever. He never says the right thing, and what he does say often is so embarrassingly a lie that and everyone in the room knows it is, although no one will call him on it. That it's just why are you even talking? Just
like yeah. I mean like. Yesterday, they're like, okay, just on a random Wednesday in September, after the team is like completely collapsed, not when they were playing well earlier, but when the team is completely collapsed, they announced this contract extension for the manager. And he's like, we talked about this all year. Okay. And then he has this line. He's done a great job with the team we have right now. What does that mean?
Where like, go ahead.
Yeah, like, are they going to have a different team? Or did he do a poor job with the team they had at some other time in the past? Like, what kind of a weird qualifier and caveat is with the team we have right now?
It's so funny because, I mean, we know the constraints that he is under. There's no question about it. But he says that, and I'm like, wait a minute. Whose job is it in this organization to put together this team? It's Nick Kroll's. Ultimately, yeah, right?
Yeah, like, right. That's another. Is he saying, like, he's done a good job despite the junk I've given him?
That's what it sounds
or
like.
Or is it, like, is it qualified as the time? Like, he was terrible with Trevor Bauer, but now we think he's fine with the guys who we have right now? We made the playoffs last year. We had a good run this year, and we still have a chance. We've got a guy in the spot who knows how to run a major league clubhouse and dugout. and we feel he's the right guy moving forward. Like, could you get less specific and personal about the praise of your manager?
That's what we're committing to, two more seasons of him.
Right, you know, he's capable of walking on 2 feet, generally, and by and large does not belch in the presence of other employees. Like, it's just so weird the way they talk about things.
He brushes his hair before he walks through the front office offices. He's generally polite.
Mostly, yeah, generally polite. Right.
Well, that's the news. Let's just talk about that a little bit. That's not the news. There's other big news I want to rant about. But maybe the biggest news, I don't think it's necessarily the biggest news, but most people probably would think it is that the Reds did finally sign David Bell to 2 more years to return as manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Now, regardless of Nick Kroll's, I don't know what you can call his statement about that. I'm like you. I'm baffled. But just the move in general, what are your thoughts about David Bell returning? That's it, right?
To be concise.
You conveyed more in that grunt or whatever it was than Nick Kroll conveyed in his entire statement. That was my thought. I mean, is David Bell a good manager? No. I thought he was early on. As we've gotten to know him more, he's not a good manager. He's not a bad manager either. He's to me, anyway, he's a mediocre manager, and he is very much like many other managers. I've seen way worse in Cincinnati. I don't know that David Bell did anything to deserve being fired. You can point to the moves he made and things like that, but to be fired, given what he had, that's really it. But the timing of it is weird. I don't know. Nothing to get excited about, but here's what I do want to propose. What David Bell now represents is when things go bad next year, and they will go bad, we have our scapegoat. He'll be the first one who's going to get his head on the chopping block when things go bad next year. That'll be, well, we're trying to do something. David Bell's gone. David Bell won't make it through next season.
You think they'd fire a guy barely into a contract extension?
Well,
I think Kroll's the guy that's going to go.
That's real money. I don't know. Who are they going to get to take that job other than Kroll?
I don't know. Is it any other owners have children?
I'm sensing a Phil Castellini joke there somewhere.
Yeah, that's a lot of jokes.
Yeah. No, I do. I think so. I think it's a buffer between management and the poor product they're getting ready to put on the field. I know a lot of people wanted David Bell fired, and I guess I get it. He's not done a whole lot to deserve the job either. Although we can, I guess reasonable people can disagree about that, but I don't know if there's anything to definitely say he should have been fired either. So now Bill says, and it was just tweeted out as if this was a done deal. No one questioned this at all. Bill notes that he expects all of his coaching staff to return. And my first thought was until Derek Johnson signs a contract, no way in the world do I believe that Derek Johnson's coming back to this team.
Why would Derek Johnson come back to this team? I mean, look, and I'm sure I'm ahead of the agenda here, but
go to it.
The Kyle Bodie situation. So Kyle Bodie was a very, very highly sought after player development person. He kind of threw his hat into the ring like, I'm going to try to partner with a major league team. And the Reds put on the full court press. This was Dick Williams, Cincinnati Reds.
Yes.
And they put on the full court press, and they got Kyle Bodie to sign.
And he signed for less money than two other teams were offering him. Let that be noted.
Right.
According to him, anyway, I guess, if you trust Kyle Bodie. And now he's gone. He's gone. A year and a half into this project. Well, let's discuss the actual news. Kyle Bodie was hired in late 2019 as the team's director of, well, he's the team's director of pitching now. That's just his title. He was basically the minor league pitching coordinator. And at the same time, Dick Williams hired C.J. Gilman as the minor league hitting coordinator. Well, this week, both kind of publicly resigned and put the organization on blast on their way out the door. And let me just briefly talk, read some of their statements. Kyle Bodie. Reds and I mutually agreed to no longer continue our professional relationship. I can't thank Dick Williams and Eric Lee.
Neither of them are still around.
Eric Lee,
the Reds director of player development, I believe it was, vice president of player development, who departed the organization in
July.
Earlier in the season. Yeah. To become a athletic director at a high school.
Literally.
Yes. I don't know what that's about, honestly.
Yeah. So he thanks both of them and thanks Derek Johnson and says the Reds are moving in a different direction in many areas of player development. It no longer felt like the best fit for either party. And he talks about the results, and they did have incredible results in a very short period of time. But that one sentence before we talk about what Gilman said, the Reds are moving in a different direction in many areas of player development. At the very moment they started going in the right direction and it was working. You mentioned the word frustrating earlier, but that makes me want to almost just scream at all the time I've wasted following this dysfunctional organization. Why are they going in a different direction?
Who knows? Who knows? But Nick Kroll was interviewed this week and had nothing to say about it. He had no explanation. He had no, he said some like ridiculous thing. We thank them for their efforts or something, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Thank you for your service. You're excused.
It's a little
Vordeer joke there.
And it's radio silence otherwise for the Reds. It's just a complete joke. And then CJ Gilman. Go ahead.
What's the new philosophy? We don't know. Who are the new coordinators? I don't know.
Your guess is as good
different.
As mine.
It's different from the one that's been working. We know that.
But that's all we can tell you. CJ Gilman, of course, is the mounting hitting coordinator. With the direction and leadership in place when I was hired, having moved on, it's just simply the right direction for me to go personally and for the Reds to go professionally. I believe deep in what we accomplished, numbers stand up on their own, very proud of that. There are many organizations with hitting and player development beliefs similar to my own, and their fruits are coming to bear at both the minor and major league levels.
Yeah. There's another line you skipped over where he says, where we committed to change,
right,
the numbers stand up on their own.
Yeah.
So clearly there wasn't full buy-in to what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that line, there are many organizations with hitting and player development beliefs similar to my own, and their fruits are coming to bear.
So,
dude, my phone's open, he says there later in the sign, too.
Yeah.
I mean, these are guys with options. These are guys with alternatives. These are guys who are in demand, whose work is at the forefront of innovation in baseball. The Reds were on the cutting edge, and for whatever reason, the guys in charge felt they knew better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you analyze this any differently at all. I mean, it's, you know, again, we follow the Reds closer than we follow anyone else, but you don't see this happening. Teams just employees just leaving and blasting the organization. I mean, this was thinly disguised.
I mean, I've heard people try to rationalize reasons, you know, why this could have happened. Well, you know, maybe they didn't like that Kyle Bodie was still taking on opponents at Driveline, or CJ Gilman is the guy who drove Jesse Winker to the game the other day when he shouldn't have been playing. I'm like, no, that's complete insanity. And it doesn't fit that any of that those would happen on the same day.
Exactly.
And set aside Eric Lee. So I don't know who's left. I mean, from what I think you and I have both heard, there are other people. The Reds haven't updated their front office kind of roster online. They still have all the people listed from months ago. It hasn't changed since the beginning of the season. So what I've heard is that there are more people gone than there used to be. I mean, sorry, than just these three lower level people who those guys brought in who were no longer employed by the Reds either.
Yeah. I haven't reported it because I can't confirm the exact numbers or anything, but I do know a number of analysts and even support staff have quit over the last year.
Now, to be fair, have they quit for either dissatisfaction or other reasons, or did the Reds cut those positions? And that could be part of the lack of commitment that these guys are talking about.
Thank you. That's you're absolutely right. I said quit, and I don't know that they quit, and so I shouldn't report that. They've parted ways with the Reds.
Yeah.
For some reason. You know, Sean Pender is the guy now who is promoted to the position of the head of player development. Okay? Sean Pender. Now, what do we know about Sean Pender? Not much, except all the publicly available evidence would seem to indicate that Sean Pender thinks that all these newfangled analytics ain't where it's at.
Do tell.
Well, I'm just saying. He's the guy that's in charge of the player development.
Yeah, but is he the guy who's in charge, or is he, like, is he a guy who's in, because he was basically leaped over, I believe, by Eric Lee.
By Eric Lee?
I don't know. That's not true. I think Pender was vice president, Lee was senior director, at least when they were promoted 3 years ago. But
right.
Pender's a longtime organizational guy.
Yep.
And I think he had been, people had been brought in to go on top of him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now.
I don't think we know anything about his philosophy, do we?
I think that I am probably, projecting too much from the fact that he's still there and being promoted.
I don't think he got promoted, though.
I think he did this week.
Oh, I didn't see that. I thought that it's just like, that's at least some kind of sign of action. I thought everything was just like a bunch of vacancies on the org chart.
Well, there are still those, certainly. Let me see if I can find it here real quick. I don't know. Anyway, let me try to contextualize why this is so frustrating to me. And everyone knows this. And if you saw my piece at the Cincinnati Magazine, you know where I'm going, basically. But when Dick Williams left, and I think, let me start there. Could it be clearer, based on publicly available evidence, why Dick Williams left at this point? We've all been kind of speculating. It's got to be that he saw this coming, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Again, people with alternatives and options are voting with their feet.
Yes. That's far more significant than any statement anyone makes or any other of the publicly available evidence. So anyway, Dick Williams leaves, and he leaves the Reds with a mostly decent team, right? A team that this year we've seen has some pretty significance and pretty obvious holes. And he leaves. Now, if the Reds had committed, and by Reds I mean Bob Castellini, had committed to, you know, really filling those holes, the Reds are an above average team. Okay, they're above 500 team, and maybe even in the division title hunt. I mean, if you just clear up those holes, maybe get a little more depth. Okay, easier said than done, maybe, but they're a much better team than they are today. And so instead, the Reds, under Castellini's direction, changed course. Okay, no, we're going to stop all this stuff we've been doing to improve the major league team. We're going to just basically tread water from this point, and hopefully it'll be, the Reds, and the Reds almost were enough to get in the playoffs that way. And now I'm seeing it happen in the minor league system. The Reds organization, when Kyle Bodie, and it's not all about Kyle Bodie and Gilman, okay, it was a huge organizational shift in philosophy under Dick Williams. But they went from the 28th worst farm system to Baseball America to currently the 8th best farm system. And again, what Gilman said, all the metrics that where they tried to change, it was the pitching was under Bodie was just coming, just leaps and bounds over development and pitching from years past. And so now it looks like the Reds finally have a winning strategy when it comes to the minor leagues. And boom, right when it's beginning to bear fruit, just like with the major league club, they are cutting bait. So what should, you and I, the diehards, what should we make of this? I mean, am I being overly dramatic as usual, I guess is my question.
No. And I think, look, we can sit here and speculate as to why we think all these different things are happening. I think what What probably is clear is that it's coming from the top.
Yes.
What we don't know is if there's a difference in philosophy or in funding and commitment.
Or both.
Right. You know what I mean? Because it may not be – there may not be somebody in there still tilting against the, you know, windmills saying, I'm just going to go by the eyeball test, enough of this spin rate stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that, you know, Cam Boniface in there and saying those kind of things and holding the day. I really don't. I think it's probably more likely. Do you remember reading a year or two ago, somebody, and I don't know if it was Kyle Bodie or somebody else, but somebody kind of, I feel like somebody objective was basically saying, like, here's how many analytics guys the Dodgers have. Here's how many analytics guys the Rays have. And then they put the Reds on that list. And the Reds were really surprisingly high on that list.
Yes.
I don't remember what the sourcing was.
I don't either, but I do remember that, yes.
It was like, whoa, the Reds are in the top 10 in staffing commitment, which isn't the only thing. But, you know, they were putting their money where their mouth was as far as, you know, oh, we're not going to spend on the field, but we're going to spend in other ways. You remember that whole story,
right? And that was Dick Williams spending that, but it maybe true in some ways. Yeah, they weren't spending on the big league team, but they did invest.
Right, and it could be as much as that investment dried up, which if you're Kyle Bodie or CJ Gilman, you may see that as a difference in philosophy.
Well,
I don't know. You know what I'm trying? This is probably like the most generous view to the Reds because it only says that they're cheap and short-sighted. It doesn't say that they're cheap, short-sighted, and separately stupid.
Bunch of idiots. Well, right. I think that is maybe a charitable interpretation, but we can't rule it out entirely. From Bodie's perspective, I'll just say what he said. And again, he's, you know, like all of us, he's going to try to make himself look as good as possible. I don't know. But he said it was an irreconcilable difference in vision leading to mutual separation. The new regime disagrees with my approach and I disagree with theirs. So here we are. Now, yeah, it could just be the new regime disagrees with my approach because they won't fund my approach. It could be that. But they disagree with my approach and I disagree with theirs. So what is their approach? I'm not funding it? Maybe, but...
That's fair.
I think it's a little of all of us, my guess.
I think that's fair. I think when you read that statement, that's only Nick Kroll. Because Sean Pinder was there before Kyle Bodie.
Yeah, but do we... Right, but he wasn't hired as a result of the Reds deciding to... And neither was Nick Kroll. The Reds deciding to overhaul player development. They kept him on because the Reds don't fire anyone. They just, you know, fell upwards. Gosh, but what gets me is that from the end of the 2020 season, when Williams left, less than a year now, the way I put it in my column, Reds ownership has proceeded to dismantle nearly every single thing in less than a year that made me excited about the future of this team. And there's plenty of things to be excited about. Minor league system trending upwards, player development getting results they never had, and the big league team being competitive this year, even into September. And so Bob Castellini completely dismantled all of that. And I just, the Reds, I feel comfortable saying this at this time. The Reds will never, ever be competitive again as long as Bob Castellini, I shouldn't say just Bob, because Phil is sticking his nose in where it doesn't belong as well. As long as the Castellinis are in charge, then I can't see, and I'm trying to get people to listen to this podcast. So I'm trying to tell you all the, we're going to keep talking about it, I guess. We'll see. But there's no reason to be optimistic. Please tell me I'm wrong.
No, sorry. You got it 100% right.
Oh, don't do that to me.
I mean, here's, you want to be optimistic?
Sure.
Here's one bit of good news that came out of the David Bell hiring. Barry Larkin will not be the Reds manager, at least to start next season.
Yeah, that is good news. I don't have any expectation that Larkin's going to be a very good manager. And Larkin's probably smart enough not to want to jump on this sinking ship anyway, don't you think?
See, that's what I said. You know, someone was like, oh, Larkin is going to finagle his way into the manager. There's one thing, you know, Barry Larkin's a really, really smart guy. And I think he probably thinks he would be a good manager. But Barry Larkin is not going to ever be left holding the bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Go
ahead.
And that's what taking this job would be.
Yep.
As long as the Castellinis are running the show. And hey, they were smart enough to have a grandfather who owned a vegetable stand 100 years ago. And so they deserve to be able to do whatever they want with this team.
It's their team. They earned it.
They earned it.
Well,
I mean, they built that stadium downtown with their own money.
Right. And really, with their own hands. I remember seeing them down there, actually.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Oh.
So, you know, you got to hand it to them. Literally.
No.
They've said that winning is the goal and anything else is unacceptable, which I'm satisfied. Saying those words was all I wanted to hear.
Can I say you do not, under any circumstances, have to give it to the Castellinis? Who's that tweet about? I don't know. ISIS or ISIS. The Castellinis and ISIS. They are, anyway. I mean, they've spent 16 years now since they made that statement about we're going to win, meddling in baseball operations. 100%. There's no question. They've been meddling from day one or refusing to spend on the team. And so, I do this occasionally because I'm a glutton for punishment. And I go back and look at those promises. You know, I talk about them all the time, those promises that Castellini made when he took over the team. And this is the sentence that just galled me beyond belief this time. It's something different every time because there's so much. It's such a rich statement. We know this team truly belongs to you. And we understand what the Reds mean to our city and our region. We know what a winning team can do for a city's pride. We also understand the unique legacy the Reds hold in baseball history and the potential to reignite an American love affair with the nation's first professional baseball team. They've acted exactly with that as their mission statement for the last 16 years, and they have reignited an American love affair with not watching baseball.
It's frustrating.
Sell the Reds, Bob. That's the only way out of this mess. I feel like I'm always overdramatic, but I don't think there's any way out of this mess without Castellini selling the team. Do you?
I mean, I don't see how it changes. No. I mean, they've had the opportunity to do things a different way, and it always kind of snaps back to the same place.
It's almost like Bob Castellini lied to us, Chris.
If he lied to us, he lied to himself. I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is not intentional.
Well, this part might be this not spending.
Yeah. I never understand that. I really don't. I don't understand. It's not my money, but if I had that much money, I would spend it.
Yeah, and again, we say it all the time. He's spent some else money. But where you were going, I think, maybe, was just that, you know, they really did want to win, and that's why he kept sticking his nose in, because he thought, I've been such a success in life. Well, they say born on third base thought he hit a triple.
And I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe it was a tomato stand when he took it over.
But see, that can't be that, because there's always money in the tomato stand, I think, right? No.
Bananas.
Oh, bananas, right.
We've already had banana money.
We did have the banana money. That didn't work out so well either, did it?
Mm-mm.
Oh, did you ever think that Bob Castellini would end up being a worse owner than Carl Lindner?
He wasn't. He's not.
Really?
He's not. He's not worse. I mean, did they win anything when Lindner was an owner?
The last I checked, Lindner's Reds had a better winning percentage than Castellini's Reds.
Well, they had fewer playoff appearances, though, at least.
Yeah, that's true. The Reds did have some brief playoff appearances a decade ago. David Bell's coming back.
That'll be fine. Who else is coming back next year?
That's a good question. Who is? Nick Cassianos is not. I'm not breaking news there. I'm just, that's my expectation. And I'm not sure, you know, Sonny Gray, 1 year left on his contract, I think. Trade bait.
What do you do with this team?
You tear it down. I mean, I guess. I mean, that's a good question. What do you do? If you're not going to commit to improving the team, and you're going to lose one of your two all-stars from this year, and you're going to have a Joey Votto, I know you're older, and you got Mike Moustakas, who, I don't know, he's Mike Moustakas, and Eugenio Suarez is hitting better in September, but who knows? I mean, I think they'll probably tear it down. That's what I think. Maybe not. I don't know. Why?
I don't know what I'd do with it. I mean, you've got a bunch of pieces that don't fit together anymore. You know what they'll do? They'll tell themselves that Suarez's September is what his new level. They will say that Moustakas just needs to get healthy.
Yeah. No one's going to get hurt next year. We're going to get healthy.
We got Nick Senzel coming back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's what I think you're right. Yeah.
I don't know. And then you got your young pitchers who, assuming they prove everything they need to prove at AAA.
Well, that is one thing. We do have a few kids that are going to be ready soon. Maybe if they let them. I don't know where you're going to play Jose Barrero. I guess center field, but if Nick Senzel's back, can you do that? Because the Reds have their shortstop. I think it's pretty clear. Yeah, we got Kyle for that.
30-year-old Kyle Farmer. 31-year-old Kyle Farmer, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, this team got handed. They got handed some gifts, truthfully. One, Jonathan India. Two, Joey Votto's season. Three, frankly, Kyle Farmer.
Yeah.
Being, like, not terrible when they needed somebody to be not terrible at shortstop. They got things they expected out of Winker and Castellanos and Stevenson. Tyler Naquin, another gift that they were handed. And they couldn't get it done. Obviously, the problem was, in my opinion, the problem was 99% the bullpen.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Because the offense was among the best until here at the end of the season when things were going awry. Offense has been fine.
Starting pitching was fine. Mm-hmm. Starting pitching was fine. It's the aspect of the team that they put zero. No, I take it back.
Yeah, you can take it back.
They did put effort in.
Right.
The effort was into making it worse on purpose.
Literally. Because of dollars. Oh.
I don't know. It's frustrating, man.
Why am I the only one? I mean, I'm a moron. Why am I the only one who is calling the Castellanian Reds management on any of this? Are you seeing it in print anywhere else or anywhere?
No.
Why is that? Is Cincinnati just that kind of town and that's just the way it is?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thankful that my editors at the Cincinnati Magazine don't mind tweaking Castellini.
I mean, I don't know. You know, is it whose role is it to do that? You know, it's to be fair, it's not the role of a beat writer.
No, right? Yeah,
it's not a TV reporter. You know, half the folks who were in the clubhouse covering the team work for the team in some capacity or another. So they're not going to do it. I mean, it's really fans and maybe a columnist or two.
Well, you know, I mean, who columnist? I guess is just Docherty.
Docherty, you know, a talk radio agitator, but most of the talk radio agitators work for the company that broadcasts the games.
Yep.
So it's not set up to be, you know, real critical of ownership around there.
Exactly. Well, and I don't mean to say just me, because I know, you know, Red Ignition, Red Reporter, those guys are certainly doing the same things. But you make an important point that I feel like I always need to point out to people, which is that it's not, it's literally the opposite of Mark Sheldon's job. He works for Major League Baseball. It's not the beat writers. They're, you know, they're reporters, and you want them to ask tougher questions. Yes, I get that. But their job depends on access to those players, that locker room and or that clubhouse. And so it's really not. It's the job of a columnist. And we don't have, certainly in the larger media in Cincinnati, we just don't have anybody that's willing to do that. So subscribe to Cincinnati Magazine. That's what I'm telling you. All right. Other news of the week. We can get into it. Dar Moretta finally up. I don't know. Some guys on the injured list. Some guys on the come back from the injured list. Naquin's out for the year. Moustakas probably is. Whatever. Let's answer some questions.
Fire away.
I don't know how much time we've got to answer some, but let's answer as many as we can. All right. Let's see here. Mike Perry. These questions, of course, come from our friends at patreon.com/redlegradio, where you two can support the world's most dangerous podcast. Mike Perry, I have just one question. What is going on with the Reds? We've been answering that one. So I wanted to, we got that answer out of the way before your question, Mike. Scott Boldman, after starting the season 6-1, the Reds are 72-73. Is this who we thought they were? Yeah, probably, right?
Yeah, it ends up being there. They're in a different way than I kind of thought, but
yeah.
I honestly didn't think the bullpen would be bad. I to be fair, I've kind of been of the belief for a long time that you really don't have to try that hard or don't have to spend money anyway to build a bullpen. But I think you do have to try.
Right. Doesn't necessarily have to be an expensive bullpen, although that was the reason the Reds cut bait on two perfectly cromulent relievers. But you got to at least make an effort. And gosh, I saw Doherty just this week. Same thing as our buddy John Fay giving Nick Kroll credit and David Bell for, turning Brad Brock and Heath Hembree into useful pieces.
Come on.
Literally.
That's. Come on. I mean, those guys did not have good seasons.
Well, Heath Hembree's ERA was only 6.38.
They did not have useful seasons. They did not they were not turned into anything. Brad Brock's 35 years old.
And he had a 6.3 ERA.
I mean, like, God bless him. He's had a decent major league career.
Yeah.
It's just that he's not able to, he didn't get it done. And that's nobody's doing.
I disagree with you. I think you got to give Nick Kroll credit. Charles Zollers, it's been 11,218 days since the Bengals won a playoff game and 9,484 days since the Reds won a playoff series. At this point, do I just get angry with my parents for having me born in one of the worst sports towns of the last 2-3 decades, a.k.a. my childhood? He's a kid, Charlie is, and bless you, man. Is there a worse professional sports town?
I don't know. There's a lot of people who can feel sorry for themselves. Cleveland's not in any great shakes.
Let's just move on to, and I don't know if we're going to get to all of them, but let's get to the next one we can. Chuck Nichols, happy Thursday, Chad and Chris. After listening to last week's pod, completely agreeing with you, I do have one question. Have either of you two followed another MLB team to evaluate the differences between how the Reds organization is managed and how a successful MLB team is managed? I personally have little free time, so don't brag, Chuck. So only follow the Reds. It's also obvious their management style does not work. Thoughts? And the reason why I just want, again, we don't closely follow other major league teams. You can obviously tell that the Tampa Bay Rays do things differently and better than the Reds. Same with the Oakland A's in general and other teams. But what I wanted to say is the most frustrating part of the Reds' collapse is the stupid Cardinals have won 12 games in a row, and they're going to win the stupid World Series. That makes it even worse that the Cardinals are the team that stole the ball from the Reds.
The good news is I won't have to spend all that time watching the postseason if the Cardinals are in it. I will not bear that 2006 season damaged me in a way that I don't think I can ever recover from that 2006 postseason.
Yeah. Well, and that was the season where the Reds were kind of in it for a little while, or we at least deluded ourselves into thinking they were in it. And,
right.
And then the Cardinals go on the big run and win the World Series after being a wild card team.
Yeah. I mean, most teams aren't perfect, to be sure.
Yeah.
The Rays do a great job. The Dodgers do a great job and have more money than anybody.
Makes it tough.
But, you know, I mean, Cub fans are pretty frustrated right now, too.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I also need to point out that I've gone a long way over the last year in praising Dick Williams and how he got this organization where it was. But it wasn't like Dick Williams was infallible. You know, he was still an owner's son who made some mistakes. There's no question about it. He did get some of the big things right. They got the Reds on the verge of being competitive. But every team makes some mistakes. But, you know, a team like the Rays has less margin for error than just about any other team because their owners won't – they got nobody comes to the games, first of all, and then their owners won't spend money. And they still figure out how to compete every single year almost. So some teams are just better. The Reds are among the very, very worst. At least for the last 30 years, the Reds have been among the very, very worst in terms of running the team. And it's not going to change. Unless you believe in Nick Kroll, and he'll tell you why things are going to be better. I look forward to hearing that.
You know, the Cardinals, I hate to go back to this, but the Joe Posnanski's newsletter today, he pointed out that the Cardinals for like the last 10 years had a different wins above replacement leader every single year.
Wow.
They just keep pulling guys out of nowhere or somewhere. To, you know, like, oh, gosh, Paul Goldschmidt happened to be on our team, you know, but then it's like Tommy Pham and Matt Carpenter and Molina and like all these different guys every year. Tyler O'Neill now.
Yeah. And what's that? Well, at the risk of, you know, complimenting the Cardinals, they just have a stronger organization top to bottom. And this isn't news to anyone, but they just do. I hate them. I hate that organization. But they're well run and have been for many years. Who owns the Cardinals?
Is it DeWitt of Dewey's Pizza fame?
Still owns the Cardinals? Really? I don't
think
know.
So.
Oh wow, you never hear anything from him.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, Seth Shaner, glad to have you do the show this week. I was struck last night with the fact that I have little hope for the rest of the season, and then we go into the long winter of desolation. How will I pass the time? I'll pick up chess, maybe. Chris is in football mode, right?
Video games.
Man, I don't...
What else? Reading.
Oh, lots to read out there.
Read the Big 50, the men and moments that made the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, it's still as timely as it was when it was released.
Yeah, apparently it's evergreen.
It's going to be for forever. That's the best part about the Reds deciding they're going to suck for the next decade. That book, man, is timely. Timeless, I should say. I have as little faith in the Reds going into this offseason, even though they competed into September this year. I keep trying to remind myself they literally played meaningful baseball in September, and that's fun. But I feel the same way about them that I did during those seasons where we knew they were going to lose 90 games.
Yeah, it's I'm with you. I'm kind of as like down on it as I've been in a long, I mean, other than those 2015, 2016, 2017 seasons.
Yeah. Gosh. Woo the Reds. I'm not sure I completely understand this question, but maybe it's because I'm not up to date on I haven't watched the last two or three episodes of Ted Lasso. Is Nick Kroll a poorly designed android, or is he a CGI character like Roy Kent? I'm trying to decide which non-human role he's in. Do you understand that question?
I don't follow that either. I'm one episode behind, but unless I miss something terrible, I don't know that Roy Kent is a...
Hope we didn't give a spoiler there.
Non-player character.
Yeah, I did go see that movie with the guy, Ryan Reynolds.
What was this? Some sort of Batman or something?
No. It was called Free Guy. That was the name of it.
Oh, yeah.
And he played a non-playable character in a video game. And it was a fun movie. It was fine, whatever. It wasn't great. It was fun, though. Nick Kroll is most certainly not Ryan Reynolds, who I think is a delightful movie star.
Very quick on his feet.
He's quick on his feet. Roy Kent, I like that character on the Ted Lasso. That's what you need to do in the off season. Seth, watch Ted Lasso over and over. Watch The Wire again. Omar coming.
Sopranos.
Ooh, my wife and I did just start our Sopranos rewatch. It's pretty good so far.
That's a good call. I think I need to do that. Let's see if I can get my wife to do that this winter.
Yeah, I thought that movie's coming out, you know, so.
Right.
The prequel.
Right.
So
the Many Saints of Newark.
Exactly. So anyway, I don't understand your question, but as usual, it is a unique and thoughtful question, I think. I think Nick Kroll is just not a leader who has been thrust into a position for which he's not prepared. Maybe a good, deputy. I don't know. But I don't think he's a leader. I don't think there's any evidence that he's a leader. I can't say that I know that. I don't see any evidence that he is.
That's fair. And I think the other thing is he is being asked or is feeling obliged to do things that in terms of defending the organization, that as we've talked about, he's just not in his skill set.
No.
Like you've talked to him before. I assume he sounded like a normal human being when you talked to him.
He did.
It's just this media relations aspect where things fall apart.
Should the Reds have someone like, the White House press secretary who's taking the questions and answering those, someone that's skilled in the art?
That's right. Just stand at a lectern.
Yeah. And answer, the questions are going to be bland anyway because they won't let me in the room to ask questions. Drop firebombs. Joey Gaditza. Good day, gentlemen. I hope it isn't the case, but if the Reds only do one thing in the offseason, what do you hope that is? And the caveat here in Joey's question is Bob selling the team is not an option, even though I wish that was the one thing. What's the one thing? I've got an answer here. Do you want to try to answer me? Go ahead and say mine.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Maybe it's more than one thing, but I want Bob Castellini to make a decision that he's going to not meddle and then go hire Theo Epstein to run the Reds and give him carte blanche. Or heck, bring Dick Williams back. Well, that's worse.
One simple thing, one simple trick to win the World Series.
Step one, hire Theo Epstein. Step two, ? Step three, profit. Is that that's the way the meme goes?
I think so.
Yeah. Do you have if they can only do one thing in the offseason, the problem is they can't just do one thing. They've got so much to do if they want to fix this thing. And so.
Yeah, I was going to say get like trade for Shohei Ohtani, but I think they need more than that.
Even that, right. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Let's see how much time we got here. We're going to have to get out. Rich Thompson, as always, your question is thoughtful, well written. I love it, but as always, it's too long, short and pithy, remember? But he was talking. Rick Thompson's questions that related to T.J. Friedl's first major hit being a home run, and it was a nice moment when Mookie Betts, traded an autographed bat to get the fan to throw the home run ball back out. Even though I'm sure Mookie Betts had never heard of T.J. Friedl before this weekend.
But that's cool though, because it showed that I like just the fact that like Mookie Betts was somehow paying attention enough to know that T.J. Friedl made his major league debut the night before.
Yeah, and. And Mookie Betts didn't have to do that. Mookie Betts is one of the inner circle stars in baseball. I love it.
He could have just trotted right on back into the dugout, no problem.
Yeah. No, I thought it was absolutely fantastic that he asked that fan for the ball back and then, brought out. And the even better part of this story, it gets even better. Mookie Betts hands this bat to the fan up there in the moon deck, and the fan's wearing a Reds jersey. And that's an exciting moment, I got a bat for Mookie Betts. And he did exactly what I would hope that I would do. He walked over to a kid wearing a Mookie Betts shirt and handed the kid the bat.
Yeah, that was really cool, too.
It was. The whole thing was fantastic. Rich's question is, was that the best highlight of the Red season? And no. I mean, there have been some highlights. Wade Miley's no-hitter. Nick Castellanos flexing on the Cardinal. There have been some fun times this season. But I did appreciate that.
Period.
Joey Votto. Yeah, Joey Votto. That's probably the number one. His continuing amazingness. Let's see here. What do we got left? What have I skipped? Hooper Powell. Hooper Powell. In my spare time, I have indulged in movie casting, and I have a dilemma. Hooper seems to always have a dilemma. I'm casting a reboot of The Three Stooges. Who from the Reds front office shall I cast as Larry, Curly, and Moe?
Reboot.
I don't know the answer to that, Hooper, but I like imagining the Reds front offices. Larry, Curly, and Moe.
They're like carrying a lot of ladders around and panes of glass in the front office these days.
Right. I think Phil Castellini's probably Larry. And so every time Nick Kroll says something dumb to the media, you know, he's Mo, I should say. He's Mo.
Yes, slapping him around.
Yeah, he's smacking him around a little bit and poking him in the eyes. And this is where we are in this season. In a month where the Reds literally played meaningful baseball, this is what we're reduced to talking to, Chris. Talking about. Nathan Connor asks, hey, if you were a hot dog and you were starving, would you eat yourself? I would.
There you have it.
Do you get that reference?
No.
If the moon were made of green cheese, would you eat it? This was from, I'm doing a terrible impression, but this is from when Will Ferrell did his impression of Harry Carey.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
if you were a hot dog and you were starving, Harry Carey would have. I'd put some mustard and relish. I'd be delicious. So go watch that on YouTube.
I've been watching Norm MacDonald clips on YouTube.
You're reading my brain, man. That's how I wanted to end this thing. I was talking a little
No.
My wife, she was concerned about me when the news came down that Norm MacDonald had passed away from a 9-year battle with cancer that no one knew about. And cancer can stick it, by the way. Because, you know, about every other month or so, I'd be sitting on the couch and just go down a Norm MacDonald rabbit hole. Because he's my favorite stand-up comedian ever, and that didn't even count the things of you know, from Saturday Night Live. I feel like, though, he's not very well known for how beloved he was within the comedy world and how just kind of elite he was as a comedian. I don't understand why he wasn't the biggest comedian on earth. Thoughts?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, as they say, he was the comedian's comedian. Which kind of becomes a cliche, but gee whiz, he was just so funny, and so dedicated to the joke. I mean, I don't know if he said this or somebody said it about him, but you know, bad comedians want applause, and the best ones just want the laugh, and it was clear that's what his priority was.
Yeah. Think of a guy like, I don't want to cast any aspersions, but a guy like Dane Cook. That's who I thought of when I heard that he said that. You know, Dane Cook wanted the applause. Is he still around? I don't know.
I don't know.
I heard his brother stole like millions from him, though.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it really sucks to be Dane Cook. I remember the first, I literally remember the first time I saw Norm MacDonald. It was on the David Letterman show. As longtime listeners know, I'm a big David Letterman fan. I saw this week that was literally his first television appearance, but I remember, and I had no idea, obviously, but I remember him walking out there, and the reason I remember it is I've never heard anyone with a delivery like that, you know, that kind of voice pattern he had, and I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard, and he never stopped being funny. Then when he got it to Saturday Night Live, you know, just oh my goodness, his humor, you guessed it. Frank Stallone, you know, just the dumb stuff that the way he said it could make me laugh. I mean, I can't think of, he's certainly the top five. I can't think of five people in my lifetime in comedy. And I've been a pretty dedicated fan of stand-up comedy that I would put in that inner circle with him. I mean, who is it over the last, you know, 30, 40 years in terms of stand-up comedy? I mean, you probably have to put Chappelle in there, right?
Chappelle's the only one I can think of who really, you know, I know Louis had his moments for sure.
Yeah, I probably put most people wouldn't maybe because the longevity wasn't there, but I put Mitch Hedberg there just because I think he was just different.
He's certainly influential, I think.
I'm trying to think stand-up comedians. Seinfeld, I guess you would put in that era.
Yeah, Seinfeld's like the Yankees of right. Stand-up.
Yeah, that's Jerry Seinfeld, by the way. I don't know.
Another thing is, I think Norm MacDonald is probably the best talk show host guest.
Oh my goodness!
Of the last 25 years, which it's not nearly as big a deal as it was, you know, in the 70s. Right. But man, he was just. I was watching that, you know, the clip of the Courtney Thorne Smith clip.
If you don't know what that is, go look up Norm MacDonald, Conan O'Brien, Courtney Thorne Smith, some variation, and just watch it and just marvel.
And just, you know, of course, once you've seen it once, you just are so excited waiting for it to happen.
That last moment?
Oh, God. I'm just, and you see him and Conan both were like, it's going to happen here in a minute. And they're both just so gleeful about this stupid joke he's going to make.
Well, Conan's like, oh, do something with that, you know, and then he makes the joke. And I'm not going to ruin it. Maybe I should, but I'm not going to ruin it because I can't deliver it like him. I listened to Conan actually has a podcast, evidently, and I've never listened to it except till this week. I saw that he had an episode about reflecting about Norm MacDonald. And they were talking about a lot of things, but that particular Courtney Thorne Smith. And who remembers Courtney Thorne Smith these days? But she started a movie with Carrot Top, this much I know. And, you know, they were talking about that. And Conan said he was the one guest. And you're right. Who cares about talk show guests? But I'm glad that he was, because we have this treasure trove on YouTube now of all these appearances on talk shows. But Conan says he's the one who really made me genuinely laugh. I had to fake laugh a lot in my career as a talk show host, he said. But he, and you watch Conan in that clip when Norm delivers that last you know, punchline, and Conan's just going nuts like the rest of us.
He's just delighted by the whole thing.
Completely delighted. And poor Courtney Thorne Smith, bless her heart. She's pleasant.
Well, right. You know what? So number one, I loved her work in Summer School with Mark Harmon.
As all of us do, yes.
All of us who were 14 at the time did, but no, I you know, the Bill Simmons Rewatchables podcast did Dirty Jobs this week, which just purely an excuse to talk about Norm.
Dirty Work, I think is the name
Dirty
of it, right?
Work, sorry, but, yeah, Dirty Jobs, a different deal altogether.
Yeah, but watch that again.
Yeah, well, they pointed out that that Courtney Thorne Smith was basically like on a regular on, first off, I didn't know this, but she was on the Norm Show.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
At least one time. Yeah. But,
that went for 3 seasons, by the way, the Norm Show, and nobody remembers anything about it.
But she went from Melrose Place to Ally McBeal to According to Jim for like, and then she was on 2 and a Half Men, apparently, all shows I didn't watch, but
right.
She was like a sitcom regular for 20 years straight.
Wow. So she's probably sitting on a lot of cash right now.
She has got to be, yeah, just rich enough to buy a vegetable company.
And perhaps purchase a team.
We should work on that.
We should.
Your billboard campaign might be, you know, have better luck if it's like Courtney buy the team.
Courtney buy the Reds. I love it. I love it. Well, I'm sorry we diverted there. I did want to mention Norm MacDonald because along with you, I talk about Letterman a lot, but Norm MacDonald really shaped, as I was you know, kind of getting into comedy, really shaped my personal sense of humor, or at least he fit my personal sense of humor. And if you don't really know Norm MacDonald, go down that rabbit hole on YouTube. I promise you, you won't regret it. Well, the actual last question I wanted to ask was, since we are giving up the podcast at the end of the season, what should we transition to a different type of podcast? And if so, what should the subject of the podcast be?
That's a good question. Now, the interesting thing would be for you to find a topic where you can continue to have the same guests, the same roster of guest hosts. So it's got to be something that your brother and Bill and Jason Linden and I all have in common.
The Reds is really the only thing.
I think it's a great idea. Or maybe what you should do is just pick, like, for a month, once a month, the topic is going to be like, this month it's movies, and then next month it's basketball, and then after that it's politics, and you basically just completely alienate everyone who ever listened to the show. Just drive the numbers down slowly but inevitably.
And so that we can move the podcast to Miami.
That's right.
Or
that's
something.
Right. That's right.
Oh, man. What? Go ahead.
No, that was also the plot on first season of Ted Lasso. But now that I think about it, she didn't have an end game, did she?
I don't think so. She was trying to get back at her ex-husband.
Yeah, just spite, right? It wasn't like, I want to move the team. It's kind of...
Yeah, he loves this team, and so I'm going to ruin it.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I'm going to move the team to Miami, and I need to do this first. It was just like, it's going to make it bad.
Yeah, because it hurts my ex-husband who hurt me.
I wonder.
And as I presided over a lot of divorce cases as judge, and I can tell you that it rang true.
Yeah, that's fair. Do we know that everyone in the Cincinnati Reds organization is still happily married?
I can speculate on that topic. It's an interesting question. We might need to
research. Ex somewhere who's a really, really big fan?
And Castellani's driving them into the ground to spite them?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Everyone's doing their best.
And they're trying hard. Well, that's enough for this week. I wasn't intending to drop any news there. I haven't made a decision to stop the podcast at the end of the season. But if I did, we now have some ideas about how to transition to a different topic. I don't know. You know, I watched the first Bengals game and watched part of the second one. Maybe we just need to talk about the Bengals. They're
football podcast. Yeah. That Sopranos rewatch. You and your wife could chat about each episode.
No, she would never appear on a podcast with me. She barely appears in public with me.
She barely appears on the couch with you to watch the show.
Exactly.
Speaking, that's a podcast recommendation, which I like to throw in every now and then. There is a Sopranos podcast with, let me get the title of it here real quick.
Really? I need to subscribe to this.
Talking Sopranos. It's Michael Imperioli and Steve Shripa, who played Christopher and Bobby Bacala, mm-hmm. respectively. And they talk through every episode.
Oh, so they go episode by episode?
Yep, they're up to 78 episodes right now.
Well, that's
I haven't listened to all of them, but it's pretty interesting. You know, they started doing it during the quarantine and everything, and they tell stories from the episode. They have guests on, you know, just what you'd hope for. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I need to check that out because that would be fun to listen to, you know, episode by episode as we do the rewatch. Although now, since, you know, Michael Williams died, famously Omar Little from The Wire, we're thinking about transitioning to a Wire rewatch. So I don't know what we'll do, but.
Well, they're both there for you.
They are, but I'll have to listen to that podcast. Good recommendation. All right. I know we completely went off topic here at the end. It went off the rails. Two things to say about that. Number one.
Guaranteed.
Every time Chris and I get together, it goes off the rails. So you shouldn't expect anything less. And the second thing is, you know, we ranted and raved for a little while, and we just wanted to laugh a little bit. The Reds are going to stink in the near future. I wish that weren't the case, but I don't know. We'll try to make as much fun of it as we can. That's my pledge, I guess. Any final thoughts, Chris?
No, you know, it's just baseball. Nobody makes you watch it. And, you know, if it's not making it happen anymore, you're free to do something else. Or, as I choose to, I like to live in the past when things were better. So I read books and watch shows and clips of old Reds games when they were more fun.
Including books, including The Big 50, the many moments that made the Cincinnati Reds. Yes. Sell the Reds, Bob. Sell the Reds. For Chris Garber and Freddie Boom Boom Barnes, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.